Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. July through September is considered the fire season in the western United States. Because of the summer heat, most of the vegetation dries out during this time, creating the perfect opportunity for a raging wildfire. One flick of a cigarette or one loose campfire and the whole forest might go up. I don't know if you guys have ever heard about the fires that have been raging all over California and in parts of Utah. But last I heard, the one closest to me in Utah, about not more than 10 miles away, is less than 4% contained. Because of this extremely wild fire and the difficulty the firefighters have found in containing it, most of the canyon roads have been closed down. My state has been lucky though. At least none of us have had to evacuate our homes like those in California have. I can't imagine losing everything in a fire that could have been prevented. I would be so bitter about it. But Utah has suffered in other ways. The air has already notoriously bad in Utah County because of the surrounding mountains making it impossible for total air circulation. It's even worse with the fire burning. Smoke constantly hangs in the air, and my entire home smells like a campfire. The local authorities have cautioned parents of young children to keep them inside as much as possible to avoid breathing complications. Authorities have also warned everybody not to enter the canyon for any reason. They say the fire is too dangerous and uncontrollable at this time. Additionally, the local fire departments and ranger stations have been so overwhelmed that a few weeks ago, they began asking for volunteers. My boyfriend, James, signed up almost immediately with two of his friends. He has always wanted to be a firefighter, but the ranger he signed up with assured him that he would not be anywhere the actual fire. Instead, he would be completing and filing paperwork that the rangers were too shorthanded to do themselves. James was assigned to a ranger station up the canyon and would work shifts like the actual rangers do, 3 days on, 3 days off. The first few times he went, he told me it was really boring, but he loved doing anything that he could to help Ben. It was bigger than himself. So he planned to go through training to become a real firefighter later this year. Secretly, I was glad he was bored with the paperwork. That meant he wasn't in danger. But a new trouble was coming when he came home in an excited rush after one of his regular 3-day shifts. He told me that they had asked him to be a part of the crew that brought food and drinking water to the firefighters currently stuck up in the canyon with the fire. Of course, he accepted, but I was very angry with him. He should have talked to me about it first. I had a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach when he told me that he was going. I felt something bad might happen to him, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. All I could do at the time was wait. I'm also still quite a bit worried about the events that played out after his trip, and I need some advice or maybe some help explaining what I saw. James was to report to the station on August 1st and complete a mandatory training exercise that lasted 2 days. After that, the crew would go further into the canyon and locate the firefighters to deliver their supplies. The total trip would take 5 days, and he promised me he would be home on the night of August 7th. He wouldn't have cell phone reception, but there was a satellite phone that he could use in case of an emergency. Those 7 days were the worst of my life. I couldn't sleep because of worry, and I tortured myself with Google searches on the statistics of yearly firefighter deaths. I kept reminding myself that he wouldn't be fighting the fire. He was only delivering supplies to the firefighters. But when the clock ticked 12 a.m. on August 7th, the night my boyfriend should have returned home, I launched into a frenzy of panic. I called the local fire department and the local sheriff station in town, asking for information, but nobody could give me anything. Most people didn't even know about the trip that the volunteer crew had taken. My sister came over to stay with me, and it was great comfort having her with me, but it didn't change my worry or distress. On August 10th, 3 days after my boyfriend was to return home, I was living in a daze. Time passes slowly, or not at all. I took work off in order to cope with the stress I had encountered, and I was convinced my boyfriend had died. I was only waiting on that cell phone call to confirm it. While Google searching more annual firefighter deaths, a notification popped up on the top of my screen. It said, "Photos from James' iPhone have been successfully uploaded to iCloud." I quickly clicked on the notification and began to cry. I knew James kept his phone set to manual uploads, meaning he would have to initiate any sort of upload. Maybe he wasn't dead or fatally wounded after all. But as I scrolled through the pictures that he had uploaded, my heart began to sink even further than it had sat before. There were 5 photographs that had been uploaded, but before I could click on them, I got a phone call. It was the chief of the fire department calling me to inform me that James was okay, thank God. They had run into some trouble with their vehicles, and that's why the trip had taken 3 days longer than expected. James was currently being treated for minor cuts and burns at the hospital, and the chief told me I could come and get him. I flew out the door and sped down the road. I was so relieved. My heart was pumping so fast, and the 39-minute drive to the hospital felt like a millisecond. I stood in the door and saw James there. He stood to hug me. He apologized for scaring me and told me he wished he hadn't left me, and I forgave him instantly. I was just happy to have him home safely. I asked him what happened, and he said he couldn't remember. The doctor then stepped in to explain to James that he had a combination of altitude sickness and smoke inhalation that caused a form of amnesia. It might also be due to the extreme stress and shock. The young doctor also told me the lack of sleep could be to blame. In short, James's doctors did not know what caused his short-term amnesia. I was told James might regain those memories from the trip he took, but he also might not. They assured me that James had passed all other memory and psych exams, and that from now on, he should be fine. James and I have spent the last few days at home, and I helped him recover. I tried to help him piece things together in his memories, but for now, it just seems useless. He couldn't remember anything. It wasn't until yesterday, August 15th, that I remembered the notification I had received. I hoped that the pictures James had uploaded could help jog his memory. So I pulled out my laptop and logged into our iCloud storage. The 5 pictures had all been taken on August 5th. A few hours between each one. The first thing I noticed was that all of the pictures had a neon tint to them, like a filter had been placed over them. The colors of the flowers and leaves were very vibrant, This stuck with me because it was quite odd. I remind you that it's fire season and the vegetation should be dried up. The first picture was a close-up of an insect on James's finger. It looked like a ladybug at first glance, but closer inspection revealed the bug had 8 legs and it was kind of greenish. Rather than regular circular spots, they seemed to be octagon-shaped. The next picture was of a grove of trees. It seemed average enough, but you see the trees weren't like regular trees found in this area. I had never seen anything like them. The roots had been pushed to the base of the trunk, several feet from the ground, almost like long, spidery legs. I zoomed in closer on the picture to see that one of the trees had several different kinds of leaves growing from one branch. Pine needles, oak leaves, shrub leaves, even a few tea tree leaves. The third picture was of a deer that was green-like in color. At first, I figured it had been a Photoshop or something like that. But after a closer inspection, I found the amount of time it would have taken for the shading and tinting would have been enormous. It was impossible that that photo could have been retouched. I was also surprised and disgusted to find that the deer had 3 sets of antlers growing from down its spine, and that one of its hoofs peeked out from under the brush at 4 claws. They were just so, I don't know, I can't really explain. They almost resembled, like, switchblades. Since then, I've done some background searches to see if the photo had been retouched, and I can't find anything similar to it at all. The fourth picture featured a tree trunk that had been scorched. But rather than sap pouring from the open wounds in the tree, a thick, red liquid similar to blood in color and consistency seemed to pour out. This picture, although the least surprising, made the hair on my arm stand straight up. The tree was, in fact, bleeding like an animal would. The last photo was actually a video. The thumbnail was a raging fire. I looked at James and his facial expression told me that he didn't remember anything. He asked me if I was messing with him, and his voice shook when he spoke. He was sweating, and I could tell he was distressed. I apologized for pressuring him to remember, and helped him into bed. Later that night, I watched the video alone, and it was horrifying. The video, about 30 seconds long, was filmed from behind a bush and was obviously been filmed on a handheld device, as it was extremely shaky. The video depicted 15 or more men in hazmat suits, wielding flamethrowers. They sprayed the flames all across the trees, and even onto some animals that had been trapped in the inner circle. The footage was neon like the pictures had been. The trees and creatures in this video looked strange too, like they had been morphed and changed into something otherworldly. This video convinced me that the photos hadn't been retouched or meddled with. The cost of the equipment alone to produce a video with such realistic-looking creatures would be well into the hundreds of thousands. Most disturbingly, as the creatures burned alive, their squeals sounded like... They sounded like humans. The fire raged, and its roar was deafening. When the video ended, I just sat staring at my computer screen for a very long time. It seems that these fires, at least the one that James had documented, weren't the product of a loose campfire or a rogue cigarette. They seemed to be intentional. They're containing something.
They're killing something.
Thanks for watching this video. If you enjoyed the story, be sure to hit that thumbs up button. It helps me a lot. If you're new to the channel, hit that subscribe button and turn notifications on, as I upload almost every single day, with scary videos just like this one. If you have a story that you'd like to hear on the Swamp Dweller channel, be sure to send it to the email that you can find in the description and pin comment down below. Much love and thanks to Jupiter Stan for allowing me to read their story. I really enjoyed this one and I thought you guys would too. What do you guys think could possibly be in these woods that would make the government want to burn them out? I would love to hear your thoughts. See you guys again soon for another creepy video. Thank you.